Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Blue Abroad Show. This beautiful Monday, the 9th of October, 2023. I'm Tez. I've got Ian from the Navy Blue Corner with me tonight. Hello, mate.
Oh, mate, thanks for having me. Very keen for this one. It's an interesting feeling, I think. I think last night, John Nicholls' medal made me really miss football, which it feels like the off-season, I'm always so keen to start talking about the trades, who we bringing in, what's happening in the draft. But I think it really hit me last night that I just wish we were still playing footy. I need it. 2024 cannot come sooner.
I'm with you. I spent, I think last week was the first week where I felt kind of like a human being again, because, you know, like the emotional roller coaster of round by round, you know, and we just succumb to it, goes on. And then I think one week after prelim, I was like, oh my God, like I'm like unsettled. And then last week I'm like, oh, I guess I have to be human again now.
It's such a weird feeling. I had a weird sort of emotions after the season ended. Immediately it was just, I wasn't ready. I was not ready to start doing season wrap-up content. I just wanted to keep going. And then I think I was similar to you, dropped off a little bit, and it's like, oh, gee, it's nice to have a week or so off of not stressing. But, I don't know, last night got me fired up. Vossi, Sayers, there were some good speeches going around, and, well and truly ready to go.
Absolutely. Well, mate, let's touch on it. We're going to touch on the night. I'm going to recap everything that happened last night. We're going to touch on what's happening in the moment. There's a trade request that we're going to get through. We've got an update on Zachy Fischer and that situation. We heard a bit from Nick Austin today, so we'll unpack what he had to say. And then we'll just, you know, just do what we do on a Monday night. Well, let's start with you, mate. Tell us your recap and your thoughts overall on last night, John Nicholls' medal 2023.
Well, first ever time I've been to a Best and Fairest. Been to a couple of Carlton events here and there, but first Best and Fairest, and honestly loved it. The vibe in that place was unreal. Like, it's been such a weird season from where we've been and where we got to. And obviously there's such a level of disappointment and wishing that I think we went a little bit further, but just the energy in that room from the start all the way through. And obviously as things start to get a little bit looser, a few more drinks in everyone, as the count gets to the end, it starts to get a little bit more rowdy, but it was just such a wholesome experience. It really made me so grateful of, I think, just the community we have, all the people, all the faces. It was unreal. And I mean, really good vote count as well. I definitely started the night thinking it was probably Charlie Curnow's to win, because I thought Cher would be leading, but then as we start to get nice and close near the end, he obviously missed a few of key games as the season progressed, and I was somewhat surprised that it was Wiedering up there. But I mean, he just had such a great season. He got those votes early, and it helped him in the end. It was a lovely night.
This was my third, easily by far the best one I've been to. 2019 I thought was awesome. It was my first one. Like, you know how we finished the season pretty strongly and gave ourselves, well, we look back now, a bit of false hope, but like there was a bit of hope back then. And then we missed out for 2 years because of lockdowns and COVID. And then 2022, mate, I'll tell you, last year was, I think from memory, it was a week after round 23. If it wasn't 1 week, it was 2 weeks after round 23. So I felt like it was close after the game anyway. And it was a bit morbid last year. It was last night. I think as we started recounting, it was funny to see everyone cheering after round 13, the highlights. And they got to the semi-final and everyone's cheering the highlights again.
It's crazy. It's such a weird feeling. I think it's something for me, someone of my age. I'm only 27, so haven't seen anything like what we've seen this year. Some of my favorite memories have been here. The furthest we've gotten in finals that I've been able to witness has been this season. And obviously I think wins make the feeling around the place as a collective community a lot better. It's a lot easier to be in a happier mood when we're playing good football and we're able to get to at least a prelim. I know it's not what we want. We want the grand final. We want to win a flag. But the progress that we made this year is incredible. And yeah, as I said, it kind of is easier to be more up and about. But I think it was Vossi or who mentioned the stronger together at the actual awards. And it kind of really feels as if something has happened with the fans, with I think the players as well. From them, there's this gratitude from everyone towards each other that we're all in this together for better or worse. And it feels like it's all starting to make sense weirdly from, I guess, like a player, from a club, from fan point of view. It's a nice magical moment currently.
Yeah. I think one of the many things that I took note of and made a mental note last night was the talk around, rather than celebrating what we had achieved, it was about celebrating who we had become as a club. And I really enjoyed Luke Sayers, how honest he was, where he said, you know, the way we were 18 months ago and how we would have handled things 18 months ago compared to now. And then I think, I mean, we've spoken about it here on the channel, you know, in order to prove that you are stable, you have to actually get tested. So your stability actually shows. So I liked how candid he was about that. I think all of us at some point had a level of a breaking point. What do you reflect on now from start of year, middle of year, and now, like, how do you actually absorb it all?
I think that's the weirdest thing. Just, I guess, being involved in the content, you're so in the moment then and there, having to react to everything. It's so hard to take that step back. And I think that's probably what we all kind of got caught in to an extent when it was so bad. Obviously, it's easy to say that now that things have turned around and we played finals. We got the base level of what we're after this year, but it just kind of really makes you reflect and think you need to see a full year. And I think we kind of all had that last season of don't get sucked in by the start of the season because look what happens. We didn't make finals. You see that back end of the year, you got to see things through. And I think seeing it again this year, it really does show you what a full 12 months does and that anything can change so quickly. Don't get too high. Don't get too low. I think that's just kind of my mentality at the moment and just trying to see what can evolve and trying to back them in as much as possible. They've really shown us this season that they dug in, they went through a really tough period. Who knows what you're going to cop next year? I think they said it perfectly. Start from zero next season. It's what it is. We're back to square one. What happened last year kind of means nothing in a sense of, you have to win games for football next year. Just because we made a prelim doesn't mean we're going to make one next year. But I'm just so willing to back everything in. It just felt like from the top of the club all the way down, it just, I don't know, just that feeling of if we feel professional, like an organization for once, which is odd.
Yeah, there's a maturity, no doubt. I think also because I know I panicked after round 13 or even before round 13, I panicked because none of us had seen this group do it yet. So I think now we have 2023 as like the starting point of like a reference. So if it gets tough next year, I mean, heaven forbid, I don't want to see 8 losses out of 9 next year. I'm hoping that we can put that behind us. But, you know, there's probably going to come a time next year where they're in a bit of a rut. They're in a hole. It's a long season. I think every team this year who played, even the Premiers, had a 3 or 4 week patch where they just were not anywhere near their best. So I'm curious to see how that goes. But now because we've got the reference point of 2023 and what happened and what they overcame, I'm hoping that's going to give us a bit more confidence that they can do it because they have done it. And then I think my other question for you is, how do you look at the motivation of this group? Because up until now, it's always been having to respond from loss or having to respond from a negative situation. This group, for the most part, I think if ever, hasn't had I don't know if comfort is the right word and if it might be taken the wrong way, but like there is a comfort in knowing that they can do it. So they're inspired by it. How do you look at the motivation of the group?
I think that's the tough thing. And like you mentioned, talking about has this group before, I think this season, ever taken that step? When the adversity was there, they seemed to fail every single time. And that was the hard part of why, when we were playing so poorly this year, you thought going into 2023, they've dealt with the heartbreak of last year. Surely that's the motivation to get us over the line. We've been in the situation. We made all the mistakes. Surely you don't continue to make the same mistakes. And to a degree, we kind of did. And what kind of gives me a lot of hope in next year is just what we were able to do in those close games. We went from a team that we bottled everything. Like every time Carlton are up by 5-10 goals, you still think, I've seen Carlton lose from here. I'm not confident. If anyone can lose it, it's like the rhetoric was just only Carlton can lose it from here. And it was from Carlton supporters, from opposition. Whereas I had a note here looking back at it. We had 7 games this year where it was decided by 10 points or less. 1 draw, 6 wins. We beat Geelong by 8, GWS by 10, Melbourne Gold Coast by 4. And then the 2 finals were 6 points and 4 points. And the draw was obviously round 1. So we went from a team that seemed to bottle it in those close moments to all of a sudden we sort of dug in and we just grit our teeth and we find a way to just get the job done. I felt a lot of the time this season, and the motivation to get it done, it feels as if we're now this, there's a bit more expectation again. And was that the issue throughout this season when the expectation was finals? Did that lead us down the path of questioning things and not buying in potentially? But I think the motivation is they've had the taste now. They know what finals is like. Best part is they've got the good experience of finals. It wasn't another, we go in, we play one game, we're out. And it's like, well, what do you gain from that? I think being able to go there, almost knowing what it takes, it felt like in that Brisbane game, we just didn't have that other level. We maybe just didn't have the full experience of when it does really get tough in this moment. Do we have that next step? I think you'll learn next year whether we do. But yeah, I think my confidence in this group is that they had all the right experiences this season, from the doom and gloom midway to get us to finals. That was there. And now we've got the finals experience. It just feels like I've been through everything. What other adversity does this group have to come up against and overcome? Finally, they've done it. And that's where my confidence is definitely stemming from.
Yeah. Having watched the granny, it was the first granny I've watched, I think, ever, that I can remember, where we weren't in it. And I said to myself, we can match it with these teams.
Mm.
Brisbane away is tough. And so I understand now really how important a home prelim is, but surely there's confidence that they get from knowing that they played Collingwood, a full strength Collingwood. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe Collingwood were a little off because they had sewn up their top spot and whatever the case may be, they weren't playing with the same spirit. But I feel like there's a little inner confidence that we can match it with Collingwood and we can match it with Brisbane potentially on a grand final day.
I think that's such a positive. And I think the only team we haven't beaten since Vossi took over is Brisbane. So there's confidence in the fact that apart from them, we've beaten everyone. So on our day, we can match it. And even in the final, we were so close. And another thing that really gives me confidence is looking at that back half of the season and probably what it did to us. And probably the big learning, I think, for next year around consistency and banking those wins early. We had to win 9 out of 10 just to make finals in the first place. We had some injuries. It takes its toll physically on the guys. And it felt in that last moment where we had to take that next step. We were just a little too battered, a little too bruised in those final moments. If you're able to manage your squad, maybe like a Collingwood were able to, like a Brisbane in the last month or so of the season, knowing you've kind of got finals sewn up and you can manage a few of the bodies, try a few different things in game. You're not having to win them all. I just wonder what that'll do for if we get into that situation. We have to obviously do it first, but if we're there next season, what we can do and what the coaching group can actually learn in the last month, if they're able to tinker with a few things. And because that maybe is something that hurt us come finals time. We kind of just had to keep going with 100% of what we were going for previously. And obviously you've got guys like Charlie that maybe we didn't get the best out of them in those couple of finals games. But if we're able to learn a few things in that last month, Tinker, you never know what you're going to discover and what that'll help take you to the next step come the deep finals run.
Yeah, that's so true. Were there any surprises last night for you? Or any? Wait, yeah, we'll start with surprises. Anything that happened where, you know, you were pleasantly surprised or completely shocked?
I think Wietering, honestly, was the one I didn't really expect. I thought he'd be up there, but I just thought his first half of the year, he was just not at the level that we all probably thought he was. He even admitted himself he didn't think he was playing the best football. So I kind of had Charlie sewn up for the win, maybe Chera to be close. And I was definitely hoping Nick Newman got it. I was really hoping that he won it just because he was so consistent throughout the year and he did so well. For him to win Best Clubman obviously shows what it means and what he means to this group. All the other awards kind of made sense. I love seeing Blake Akers being able to win something there for what he did this season. Yeah, I think it was Wietering was the big one that I maybe wasn't expecting, but all the other awards were honestly really spot on. Like Charlie Curnow, best for the Players Award, and Sam Walsh, best finals. It all kind of made sense for me. Was there anything that sort of stood out to you?
I think Blake, what I was surprised with was, so he won the Spirit of Carlton Award, I think it was, the Inner Ruthless, Inner Blue, and then he won the Coaches Award. So I was surprised at how well he equipped himself to the club in his first year with us. And these type of awards, you know, the Coaches Award and these type, they're the ones that are won by people who have behaviors that we just don't see because we're not working at the club. You know, we see what happens on game day, and Blake's been a pretty good, you know, player performing his role every week. But I didn't realize how much respect he had earned already within the coaching group. So I was wrapped with that because, you know, I think even Chera, Saad, I think they probably took a year to, you know, adjust. And then in their second years, respectively, really, really took the next level, the next step, sorry, I should say. So, yeah, I was surprised to see Blake Akers, but I was stoked for him. And, I mean, I was listening to Trade Radio earlier today and they were talking to Nick Austin. And they're like, mate, there's a future third-round pick for Blake Akers. And, like, he's, you know, sixth in the BNF, all those critical moments for us, you know, in finals and throughout the season. Isn't it crazy what can be done with one move?
Oh, 100%. And that's what's, I know we'll talk about it later in this sort of episode, this show, about moves that we can make this year. But it's kind of why I'm a little bit optimistic with what Nick Austin seems to do. A lot of his moves aren't the flashy things. Some of his draft picks, they don't seem like the big flashy top 10 pick. And all of a sudden there's a player that doesn't matter. They've come in, they play a role, and it works for the team. It's the first time, really, in God knows how many years, it feels like the team is super settled with what we have. The core of this list is there. It's now those little pieces. So where can we go from there? What can we add? That's really exciting. And yeah, I probably didn't reflect enough on Blake Akers being first year in at the club and what impact he's able to have. You're probably kind of, when you look at the awards and different little things like that, the impact he's had on us fans as well with some of the big moments, you really only look back at maybe like a guy like a Chris Judd coming in straight away and having a massive impact. I know he's not Chris Judd. I'm not trying to make that comparison. But yeah, Chera took a season or two. Saad didn't have the greatest first year. We know what McGovern's been like. It's hard to come in and fresh and make an impact. But Blake Akers, you have a couple of big cult hero moments and all of a sudden now you're a massive fan favorite.
Well, I remember the days where I think Jack Barton equipped himself really well to us with his first game where he kicked four, and then that kind of bought him a good 6 to 8 months, maybe a year. I think Blake Akers he's bought himself some time now with some patience with the fans. You know, we don't take 100%. Much to impress. And I think he went above and beyond.
I think he nails what fans want the most, which is to see effort, to see work rate. And that's what he is 100%. And the reason he's able to get there for those spoils, for the headbutts to save goals, is because his work rate, and he busted his ass just to get into the defense, to be there, to get it done. It's why he was there so many times. That's what we loved to see. It's why we love what we're seeing from Ollie Hollins winning best young player. Like, it's those little qualities. And so it's, I think, really exciting that so many of these players seem to have that now, which we probably weren't saying that they were hardworking a couple of seasons ago, even if halfway through this year.
Yeah. Let's have a look at the top 10. Might swing around here.
I'll do the same.
No, you got to go more to your left, I think, or your right.
Is that working?
Other side.
Oh, I'm near it. No.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Now we're on the other side. So this is the top 10.
Easy.
McGovern with 108 votes. Walshy slipped into ninth. I think the final series really got him up there because he missed a big chunk of the year. Sardi in eighth, Doc in seventh, Akers sixth, Cripper, Chera, Kerno, Newman, and Wiedering. Was there anyone here that, is there a surprise omission here? Because I think this is like, I didn't leave the count saying, oh, what about him?
I don't think so. I feel like that's the bulk of our main performers. Gov, super consistent. Doc, Sard. I'm just trying to think. I'm looking at our list now, trying to see if there's anyone that I've maybe forgotten looking through it. But honestly, that seems like the main performers throughout this season. They're the guys that played most of the games through there. I was surprised early. One thing that's maybe a positive is Jack Silvani got a fair few votes quite early in the piece. And for someone that is maybe thought of in the fact that do the coaches like him? Is he getting a game? What's going on here? To see him maybe get rewarded when I wasn't expecting it, I think was a very big plus. But as far as the votes at the top there, I think that kind of makes sense. I'm excited to see a few that had big ends to the year, what they can do next year. Like, what can a DeConing, I saw that in the comments there. Is he someone that can really take a step and become that top 10 in 2024? That's something to definitely look out for.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Four of the top 10 are defenders. Doc is not a defender, but he's not a midfielder. I don't know how we classify Doc. Is Doc now a midfielder? Is that what happens? Yeah. Okay.
Which is interesting. Yeah. Which is interesting. It wouldn't surprise me if next year or the year after he starts to transition to go a bit back to the half back flank again. Just not that he's ridiculously old or anything. He clearly has a lot in the tank, but as you age a little bit more, do we protect his body a little bit in the back half? I don't know, but it's a great option that it feels like we're versatile.
Yes, indeed. Any quirky stories from the night, conversations with a player or something? Gee,
I feel like I'm very dull. I just sat down, enjoyed the night with my sister, chatted to a few, saw the besties, got to meet Tori, which was lovely. Yes. Finally. Yes. I think we've sort of mentioned it. I admit Rocco was the same. Wouldn't have minded a bit bigger of a portion size for the food if I'm going to nitpick, which sounds so privileged to go to this event and be like, I've had all this to drink. I've had all this food. I want more. I need more of it. But that entree was this big. What were you doing? But apart from that, absolutely loved it, to be honest. I'm in maybe the minority. I don't know. Very surprised to see the night start with the Blue Crew dancers. I felt like that was an interesting vibe. I know I don't necessarily love it. The dancing's not for me. I know I'm not the target demographic, so it's not my vibe, but it felt like a weird way to start such a big kind of presentation with a couple of people in Carlton tracksuits doing a bit of a dance. But you know, that's nitpicking again. That's just me having a bit of a rant.
Yeah. I thought that was very, very interesting. Yeah. The portion sizes. I mean, listen, I'm an eater. I've been to quite a few Carlton functions, like the President's Club function. I've been to preseason functions, and I actually always say that the food's just so well catered for, but then, I mean, you know, there's 1400 people in the room. So,
I made up for it with the Penfolds, I think is what I'll say is fair enough.
Great call out. great call out. We were talking about it before we started. Not really a white wine kind of guy, but that Penfolds Chardonnay, mate, I was guzzling that. I might have had most of the bottle that was sitting right in front of me.
Might be a few more $1 million Carlton supporters spending it on the Penfolds after last night. I tell you what.
Well, I can see why they got a little carried away, because that stuff is delicious.
It was a very good night. Very good night. But no, did you have any big conversations, anything lovely that happened? Because I was very dull on the night, I think.
I had a couple of good interactions. I did. Yeah. I got to have a really good chat with Pitto.
Oh, he's good value.
Great value. I think everyone needs to talk to Pitto once in their life. He's just such a good soul. And you can kind of tell why he's so well respected inside the four walls, just because of the way he is with the fans. But my brother-in-law is ticket holder number one for Mark Pitternet. So I had to send a message to Pitto from him, let him know that it doesn't matter that he doesn't get 30 touches. It doesn't matter that he doesn't kick four goals in a game. We see the things that he does that don't get put on the stat sheet, and that we appreciate him. So this was definitely after the many glasses of the Penfold that I had had. I don't think I would have said something to him early in the night. Got to say bye to Fish. That was lovely. Mm. Fish and Bella. Met Fish's mum. That was it.
Mm.
That was it. Had a good photo shoot, actually. The photo booth. That was good fun too.
No, I love that. I love that a lot.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the BNF. We recap. We're done. That's kind of like the official close on 2023, now that we know the awards. So, moving forward, we kind of touched on it just now, but when you look at what needs to happen to take the next level, what do you look at? Do you look at a couple of pieces externally? Do you look at a couple of pieces internally that maybe didn't play this year that can add to what we've got? Like, where's the growth going to come from?
It's such a difficult question. I really, looking at the draft hand, looking at the links so far, doesn't seem like we're going to get a lot externally. It may have to be quite internal. But it kind of goes back to what I mentioned at the top of this, where it just feels like it's consistency. Like, we make top four, you get a home prelim, or at least in Melbourne, it changes so much for you. And just being able to be a little bit not as injured, not as bruised going into finals. Like, we had Doc, we had Cripps, Akers, so many that had these little niggles late into the season. And it definitely plays a part in the little percentages trying to get to the grand final. You need to be fit. And I think there maybe is just a sense of maturity as well, that maybe we've grown a little bit from this season, being able to have those moments, know what it takes. I'm hoping that, like, you look at Brisbane, how many years and how many final series have they played before they finally even just made a grand final? They didn't go all the way, but it took them a fair few years. And we're hoping this year was going to be the fairy tale for us. And look, hopefully it definitely happens next year, but it may take a few finals campaigns to take that next step. But I'm looking at our list, and it feels like the bulk of it is that 26, 27, all the way to 30. That is kind of what we're looking at. It's just those other pieces. And if you can get some fitness into a few, I'm hoping for some chemistry as well. Looking at the back half of the year, we had a lot of injuries and replacements. And even in the final series, that forward line was getting chopped and changed quite a lot. We had Harry out, Martin out. If we can just keep some consistency and build that chemistry with the team that we're putting out there, less changes at the end of the year, I just wonder what those little things will have an impact going into a big finals campaign. That's kind of what I'm looking at. What are you sort of seeing when you're reflecting on where that next step comes from?
I think our back line, this is it. And we topped that up a few years ago when we brought in, you know, Zach Williams, Adam Saad. I don't know, like, McGovern was intended to be a forward, but now he's a backman. So I think that's okay, because we saw the emergence of Brody Kemp, Jordan Boyd, Chincotta to an extent as well. I don't know what they're going to do with Zach Williams next year, if he just goes straight to the back line or they experiment with him. The midfield, there's something. I don't know what it is. There's something's missing. bit of poise, maybe a bit of control. And then I think the forward line for me, it's the half forward flank. It's the connector. Yeah. It's the, I mean, is it just Jack Martin playing 20 games? I don't know. It could be that. It could be that. Is it, you know, Dave Cunningham getting a full preseason under his belt, being able to withstand the rigors of a full season? I do feel like there are pieces that can be added. I've subscribed to the theory that every year you have to have fresh energy on the list, you know, so you don't get, you know, there's no risk of getting too stagnant. So I don't think it's something where we're looking for a big fish, even like a, you know, I think if anything, it's just a competent player that can come and be a depth player on the squad. And then having seen what's happened with Fish requesting a trade out, and, you know, Paddy Dow, who we'll touch on shortly, requesting a trade. So I look at us now and I'm like, wow, we're losing these types now. These are the, these are guys that are, I think, more than capable of playing at the level. And they've played, I think Dow's played 70 odd games. I think Fish has played 100 odd games. So like we haven't lost these types with this group for a while. They could play next year in this team and maybe play 8 to 10 games, but not be in the best 22 when it comes down to the pointy end. So, you know, I look at Bins. I think, you know, given what he did this year, he sets himself up to be one of those internal pieces that can elevate. I look at Carroll and it's like, all right, well, this is season three coming up, three or four, you know, drafted as a real young kid. So there's another piece internally. I look at Zach Williams. There's another piece internally that can play. But, you know, with those guys elevating, there's a hole beneath. So is that just going to be a draftee? You know, it could be. There could be kids that just come in and that are competent enough to provide depth for us. So I do think there are pieces. I don't think it's a massive deal. And I don't think they're big pieces. But I think there aren't glaring holes like there were. Like last year, we clearly needed to upgrade the wing position.
Yeah.
You know, and can we trust the health now? Is that just where we're at? Like, I hope so.
Oh, please. But I kind of agree with you in everything there, like particularly the player position. It feels like that mid forward is something we've needed for a while. Yeah. I think every single year when, you know, Lockie and myself do our sort of list analysis episode, looking at the trade period and the draft, it's we still don't really have that player. It's what we want Fisher and Cunningham to be, but neither have maybe taken the step. I think last year we thought that with Fish. Obviously, it hasn't gone that way in 2023. And I'm looking at the list trying to decipher what we're kind of needing. And it really, when I'm looking at it, it's like the hole left by what we thought Petrescu, Seaton and Fisher were going to be, the good ball users, the bit of speed in the midfield, front of center. They'd be 25, 26 next year, getting into the peak of their powers. It feels like that's what we're missing, what those guys maybe haven't progressed to be. Obviously now SBS is West Coast and delisted. Fisher looks like he's going to North. There's definitely, a lack there. And even looking at the next few years in the draft, it's like 2017, the year after, Dow, O'Brien, both not going to be there next year. Year after that, we obviously get Walsh, but Stocker's not there. And then after trying to blood in this kind of rebuild, looking at the youth, the 2020 and 2021, we really went big on trading that top 10 pick out for some experience, getting Chera, bringing in Saad. So it kind of feels like the strategy again needs to almost be looking at those younger players coming through, because I'm trying to look at who's under 23 to maybe take that next step right now or be those next A graders in our team. And there's probably not a lot. It's like you've got Hollins, Bins, Cowan, but they're 19. And then, you know, Motlop, Durden, Carroll, 2021, they're still probably a couple years away from really taking over. And one I've maybe got my eye on a little bit is Matty Cottrell. I thought his back end of the year was really big. He's 23. Can he be one that adds to that role player, that high half forward potentially? But I don't know. I don't begrudge the strategy that it seems Nick Austin and the team are taking right now of really trying to look at the focus on the draft. And if we can bring in a guy like maybe a Elijah Hollins, that kind of fits in with the age profile, with what we're looking for. But I don't know. I don't want to jump too early to the players in trades that we're looking at, but I'm looking through all the names linked everywhere that are potentially going, that have requested a trade to somewhere else or are going in free agency. And I don't know if I want any of those at Carlton if we had the option to. Like, how many of the guys currently available really make sense for us? And I don't think there are a lot. So it makes it quite difficult when you're looking at the cattle that is available.
Yeah. Do you think there's anyone who would be added to our leadership group? I mean, I know right now we've got the captain and the two vice captains. I don't know if they changed that up, but did you see, you know, elevation in leadership from certain types where you think, you know what, maybe they can be part of the official leadership group? I know that they're all leaders in their own right, but, you know, there is still a leadership group.
That's the interesting one. I think one that maybe surprised me a little bit to see, that I think everyone sort of touched on after the Brisbane game, was to see Adam Saad be the one that spoke to the boys in the huddle before they went to Vossi. That was interesting to see him really take that upon himself. Nick Newman as well feels like he's one of those big leaders at the club. I'm kind of hoping that there's another one of these younger players that really takes it upon themselves to step up. I'm not too sure who that is. Is that an Adam Chera type that becomes that strong leader as well? That's probably where I'm looking for the growth as well. It feels like the older players, they've kind of taken that mantle, but who are the next few to come through? I'm not too sure. I don't love a massively big leadership group. I like it just being, let's have one defender, let's have a midfielder, have a forward and be that. Maybe it is in the forward half that someone needs to really step up. We got Charlie, we know he's a superstar. Harry's a great footballer. But who's going to be that real leader in that forward line? Do we really have someone that you're looking at in that forward half going, yep, he's like the captain of that forward line? I'm not sure. Maybe that's somewhere we can look for a bit of growth.
We seem to have a lot of those types in the back line who have those qualities. But in the forward line, it's still, I mean, Charlie took some steps forward this year in getting his teammates around him better, getting involved in the scoring chains and setting up more goals than I think I probably have ever seen him set up. If he can become a mature leader, but the thing with Charlie is I don't want him to lose his youthfulness, his spark, because I think that's what lights up the group. So I don't know if that's a burden on him to think in that way, that he needs to elevate his leadership and be a little bit more serious. But yeah, there's something there. There's something there. Mm. I want to play a little clip just to give us a bit of a recap of what's happening. So this was Nick Austin today, at the start of the day, just recapping a few things for us.
Thank you, Sarah. Here with Carlton Football list manager Nick Austin. Nick, how active do you expect the Blues to be over the next week and a half?
We'll see what comes across our way, but I think we're more committed to the draft at this point in time. Like, we'll look to add a piece or two if we can, but yeah, that'll be about it. It's probably more about finding some new homes for a couple of players first and foremost, and then we'll work through what our list spots are like after that.
Paddy Dow is one of them. He's requested a move to St Kilda. What does the trade look like with him?
Yeah, we'll wait and see. Like, we're really committed to helping Paddy progress his football. We'd love to keep him. You know, he's proven to be really handy. He played some really good football for us when we got some injuries. So we'll work through it. As long as it's something that we can use potentially in the future, that'd be our preference, but we'll catch up with the Saints over the coming days and see how that goes.
Zach Fisher's got 2 years to run on his deal, but has requested a move to North Melbourne. North Melbourne's put pick 42 on the table to start talks. Will that get it done?
Yeah, we've been pretty clear that won't get it done. As you said, Zach's got 2 years to run and he's been offered a pretty good opportunity in North Melbourne, again, to further his football. So, I don't think it's going to be a difficult one to get done, but there's a fair bit going on. They've got a lot of balls in the air, so we'll wait and see how that plays out. But the deal will need to reflect the opportunity that he's been offered and also the 2 years to run the contract.
You've got Ollie Hollins at the club at the moment. What chance do you expect to join him with his brother, Elijah, from the Suns over the next week and a half?
Yeah, there's some interest in Elijah. He's a quality player. He's a former top 10 pick. So there's certainly some interest there. He's a contracted player to the Gold Coast Suns, and as I just mentioned, they've got a change of coach. There's a lot of things happening up there, so they've got a few things to work through also. But as it stands, he's a contracted Gold Coast player, so we'll see how it plays out.
You're deeper into the first round. Obviously, the preliminary final result that pushed you through to that part of the year. Pick 7 is potentially on the table from the Cats. How much interest do you have in pushing up the ladder there?
Yeah, we'd like to get up as far as we can. As you know, Kel, you've watched this group for a number of years, and it's quite exciting that the top-end talent that's available. So, yeah, you never say never. We'll have to work through that, but there's certainly some interest. We haven't got a pick that we'd probably like to be in that moment to give us that flexibility, but we're open to anything.
And just on next year as well, you've got the Cambriali twins who look pretty good on grand final day, both of them. Best on ground performance from Ben. How much of a factor is that in your thinking heading into 2024 and accruing some points potentially?
Yeah, no, it's a factor, and they've both had terrific years, particularly the second half of the year where they've really hit their straps. And a lot can happen between year 17 and year 18, but no, they've both had unbelievable seasons, and they come through the Carlton Academy and the father-son program, and a lot of work's gone into them already, and we'll continue to invest in those two players, but it's certainly a consideration for us.
Good luck over the next couple of weeks, and all the best.
Perfect. Thanks, Kel.
Yeah. So there's a bit there. There's Dow, there's Fisher, there's Hollins, there's Campriali, yeah. There's going up in the draft. Let's start with Dow. So
yep.
I was on the way to the BNF when the official trade request was made, so I didn't really like get a chance to sit down and quickly film the reaction to it. But what was your reaction to the, not surprising, but the Dow requesting a trade to St Kilda and that whole dynamic?
Yeah, it felt like it was going to happen, felt inevitable, so there probably wasn't a lot of shock. It's just, it probably comes down to me, like, what are we going to do with that position in the team? Yeah. And it's probably my only knock on, I think, Nick Austin and the team really since they've kind of taken over is replacing the depth and leaving us a little bit short in certain positions. Like you look at the ruck stocks, I think every single year we're still a little bit light on. We don't really have a third ruck. Like we were throwing Silvani into that, which seemed to kind of work, but it probably isn't ideal when you think about it, looking at it just being De Koning, it just being Pieternet. The rest are still developing. They're not ready. Feels like we're still light on that. Key forward, since we sort of moved Casbolt on, we didn't really replace that. So when you lose an injury, what are we left with? Still kind of haven't replaced that, really. It's like what Harry Lemmy developing through. It's not 100% there just yet. So that's my one concern with, I guess, losing a Dow, losing a Fisher. You need guys on the list to be that depth player, to go deep into finals. Is that a Carroll that takes that step? I'm not too sure who it is. Are we able to bring anyone in? I don't know, but that's probably my concern, is what are we bringing in for it? Like Dow, you're probably not going to get a lot. Like Saints this year, like their third rounder is pick 54. You're going to get that. Or like Austin stated, are we looking for future picks for the Campriali twins? Is that what we're looking for? I don't know, but yeah, the Dow one's going to be interesting to see what we kind of replace it with. I would have loved him to stay for a depth thing, but I don't begrudge a player like him that just is clearly a few injuries away from playing. They're not going to commit to him being best 23. It's hard to keep those players around for a fair few years if they're not getting that opportunity.
It's true. And I mean, he did have his moment last year where, he recommitted to the club for the year. From what the reports were suggesting, there wasn't that much interest in Dow anyway last year. So I think this year he's probably, he's upped his value. He's one of Sauce's boys. So Sauce will just take him back and give him a nice home and at St Kilda. I think Carroll, logically in my mind, it makes sense Carroll would be ready to fill Dow's 8 games in my mind. That's not so much of a risk for me. I think Carroll's been on the list long enough now, and sometimes you just got to be given the responsibility to thrive. And I thought he showed some good signs in his first few games, Carroll. Didn't play that much. We haven't seen him that much this year, obviously. But that one's not too much of a risk for me because I can see that. But like you said, Dow out, Carroll up. That hole where Carroll was needs to be filled. So that, okay, that's the draft. That's fine. And that will probably be a player that's not quite ready to play straight away. But, you know, Carroll assumes the role of Dow. Fish is the one where I think, okay, is that just Elijah Hollins? Is that the gap filler for the loss of Fish? Because he was contracted for two more seasons. Looks like from what we heard just then, there's still some negotiating to be done, even though with Dow, Soss has floated the PSD. What about the Fisher, we'll call it gap or the hole? How do we fill that?
Well, that's probably the toughest one. It's still a list hole that we have that maybe Fish wasn't able to fill himself. And I think Hollins, if you bring him in, it's a best probably scenario you can get. I know there was obviously links a lot earlier to a Jade Gresham. It seemed like that was, again, that position we're after. As the season progressed, it felt like we was a bit more confident in a Cunningham, Fogarty to maybe have that role. Fish is weird, interesting. Like, good to see Nick Austin say pick 43 is not enough. About time we actually go back at these clubs and say, no, he's contracted for another few years here. Yeah. You're going to have to get, like, we're happy to keep Fisher. And I'm sure he'd be happy to stay. He loves the boys, clearly enjoys the club. He's just probably seeing himself out of the best 22, 23. He wants to play more midfield. I think that's something that has been very well publicized. He's probably not getting that with us. He's going to be more half forward or maybe half back, not getting that run. North offering 4 years, a bit more stability. Again, not. I wish we were keeping these players because you saw this year how he jumps in, different role, and how good was that for us? It helped us. You need these kind of players. He's got that experience at that age. I still think there is scope for Fisher to take another step and be a really good player. We saw last season what you can get from him. Just value is going to be interesting because I think their next pick earlier is about pick 20, which feels probably a little bit too high. We might not be able to get that. And then you're really looking at a future second, and that only seems to make sense if you're then maybe giving that up for a Hollins. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like there's many players out there in that mold that we can kind of replace with. Like, the only other player, and it's very not 100%. People won't be happy with this name, but like a Trent Bianco that got delisted at Collingwood, who's a bit of that wing, kind of outside mid, good ball use, who's 22 years old. Is that someone you bring in for one season? I don't know. Is that maybe Jack Higgins, where he can become a bit more of that half forward wing getting into the midfield? Does Hollins take another step and become a little bit more inside mid to an extent? I don't know. It's again, there don't seem to be those players out there that make sense apart from Elijah Hollins in the trade space. But it is definitely a hole that I'm hoping, unlike with the ruck, unlike with the key forward, that this time we do actually fill that gap. And we're not going into a season where all of a sudden you get a couple of injuries, Jack Martin goes down, all of a sudden Cunningham, we can't trust his body, and we're going, gee, we could have used Fisher right now, because you don't want to be in that situation. Yeah,
you don't want to be in that situation. That's so true. The ruck one's interesting because there was another bit that Nick Austin was on. I think it was with SEN. It was like a 9-minute clip, so I didn't want to play that. But he touched on, he was asked about Pitto, and he was asked about the 4-year deal. And I know that, you know, on this show there was a little bit of conversation around, well, why did we give Pitto 4 years? And Austin revealed that we were getting contacted by a couple of clubs about Pitto. And so that's why they gave him the 4-year deal. I would assume it's on less per year type money in order to get that stability. And, you know, he would potentially be the, I still don't know what the ruck situation is in the best case scenario. Like, is it Tom with Pitto as his backup in case? I don't think Tom is ready to play on his own. Maybe now he is. Maybe now he's ready to play 15 games as the sole ruckman with a pinch hitter. Murkoff has the heart condition, but I would hope that if he's ready to go next year, which I don't know if he is, that he can maybe start playing some games next year. Then you've got Hudson O'Keefe's kind of sitting there in that development tier. And then Lewis Young, who had moments in the ruck at the Dogs. We kind of played him some time in the ruck this year. That didn't look very great at all. It's a watch this space.
I think what I really want from that ruck, like it feels like your ideal list build is you have your veteran, you have your prime, you have your developing. We've kind of got two developing in Murkoff and O'Keefe.
Yep.
Like De Koning, who's just about to take that step back half of this year, was incredible. And then you got Pitto, who he's not the veteran. He's kind of also just getting into his peak. And I think Pitto's someone that I still don't think he was fit this year, to be honest. Like he seemed to be carrying a little bit throughout the season. If he can, like they're strapping on his leg, there was talk about potential back issues throughout the season as well. If you get him 100% proper preseason, I wonder what that does. But I'm kind of looking at it thinking we need almost like another TDK in the sense of a ruck forward, someone to just fill that gap that if we're desperate for a ruck to fill in, because Pitto and TDK, clearly they're one and two in whatever order you're after. If there's an injury, they can step in. Then also if there's an injury in the forward line, someone can step in and just be that bigger body. I'm not sure 100% who that was. I was kind of looking at like a Tom Fullerton from a Brisbane, but he's nominated Melbourne to go there. He was kind of that player I was looking at. I don't know if he's done any ruck duties, but looking at a guy like Brody McLaughlin from Gold Coast, who was delisted, tied VFL leading goal kicker. He's 26, hasn't played an AFL game, but I don't know. Sometimes do they take a little bit longer? Is he a free hit player that you maybe just go, look, if he's kicking goals in the VFL, he's obviously not too bad. He doesn't necessarily have to play a game of AFL, but if he's in our VFL helping Harry Lemmy develop, I don't know, is that a play that we make as one of the last spots? I don't know if he's any good in the ruck, but I don't know. I feel like the ruck forward is where I'm hopefully looking that we bring someone in.
Yeah. I think inevitably towards the end, there'll be opportunities that may come up. And I think Austin kind of said that. He's like, oh, we'll kind of wait. First priority is to get, you know, Fisher and Dow new homes, and then we'll kind of just see what happens. Then there's the comment about, you know, going up in the draft. That was interesting. I don't know if that was a tell of what we're going to be doing, but I think it's more of a eyes are open. I mean, this is a time to be opportunistic. I think Blake Akers showed us that. Nick Newman, we saw that with him a few years ago as well. So there'll be something, there'll be some little bit of goal. It's like what's the, I don't know what the name of the game is, but you have like all these different balls that you got to catch, and you got to not catch certain ones, but you got to catch the good ones. It's like, you just got to wait. There might be an opportunity. And if you're a player and you back yourself in, mate, you want to come to Carlton. You want to be a part of this. This is it.
100%. And the only players we seem to be losing in the last few years, especially when we weren't playing that well really until this season, it was guys that were kind of real depth players or surplus to requirements. We still really haven't lost anyone, touch wood, fingers crossed, that we haven't wanted to lose. Even a Dow and a Fisher were kind of somewhat okay, happy to an extent to let them go. I think when you're looking at our draft hand this season, we've got, I think, pick 16 and is our first rounder. And then this year it's 2 fourth rounders. Don't have a second, don't have a third. That's what kind of makes it tough for us. And I think that kind of is the reason that it makes sense to maybe move a Fisher on if there's someone that are a little bit down in the pecking order and we need to rejuvenate the youth coming through. It does make sense. I like the idea of trading up. I know we did last year to bring in a guy like a Lockie Cowan. So I wonder who we've kind of got our eye on, if it is bundling up at this year's first round and trying to get higher. I think they said something like Geelong's pick 7, I think it is. Maybe they're looking at trading back this year. I've heard rumblings of that, which is maybe a watch this space. But then maybe we're trying to dish off maybe next year's first round pick because we don't necessarily need it. If that's going to get absorbed for a Ben Camporelli, are we looking to get 2 first rounders in this year, or are we looking to go up? That's kind of the interesting point, because I don't know exactly what player we would be looking at. There's a few that kind of make some sense. It just depends how high you're kind of getting up there. If you get ridiculously high, I don't think you do, but like a Zane Dersma is kind of perfect for what we're looking for, that mid-forward bit of pace to him, bit of quickness. That's exciting, but I don't think you're getting that high up there. But does a Nick Watson fall? And he's really small, but he plays a lot higher, a bit taller than that. And he's nicknamed the Wizard, and he's just someone that can kick a goal out of nowhere. He's just absolutely special. He's that front half magician. So I think he's someone maybe you'll look out for. And then apart from that, if I'm looking at these pacey, skillful type players, the other one that maybe you're looking to move up probably only a few spots at the moment is a Caleb Windsor type, who is a bit more of a winger, but he's 184 centimeters, really good ball user, and he's got a bit of pace as well about him. So maybe he's someone they see can be a bit more of your half forward, become that midfielder as well. Apart from that, I'm very interested to see where we would make a move, because a lot of the draft this year feels very utility type player or kind of key tall. There doesn't seem to be a lot of that kind of pacey forward mid type player. So yeah, very interesting. I guess maybe even a Darcy Wilson that we could potentially trade up for mid forward. But yeah, going to be very, very interesting to see where we go. I'm excited.
Just need some more class, class and some more poise.
Yeah.
That's
but it's tough because those guys are going to take a few years anyway. Yes. They're not going to be coming in straight away and playing. So I don't know. What do you do in that position?
We will wait and see. That's what we'll do. It's a different trust now. There's a different trust now with everything that's happening. And well, I mean, not just because of this year, but I think Austin's shown like the guy's good at what he does and he's no nonsense. I like that we don't have the theater involved with trade period now. Like, you know, with Sauce, it was always just theater and like this quote and that quote. Like there was drama and bit of a standoff here. And I think that's one of the most impressive parts of Nick Austin. It's just, it's almost like he would probably prefer not to be speaking to media at all and just get the job done.
I love that, because that was the one thing when the Dow talk started of you're hearing out of Sauce and St. Kilda, oh, no, we're not going to give up anything for him. We're going to walk him to the preseason, my first reaction was good, do it, and Sydney will pick him up, and sucked in again. Like, I don't like that kind of talk. I know we obviously had that a little bit when he was with us, but just come to the table. And I get it, he's out of contract. If we're not coming to the table with anything, then yeah, threaten to do that. But I don't think what we'd be asking for Paddy Dow is anything ridiculous. It's just what we bring in. Probably the only kind of rumor-ish player that I'd love to bring up and get your thoughts on is with Lachie Schultz requesting a trade to Collingwood, the first thing that comes up is Jack Ginnivan, is what's going to go on with him. A goal-kicking forward half player. I know Carlton supporters, I've seen plenty on Twitter immediately say, is he someone that you'd like to bring in, knowing that we kind of need a bit more of something in the forward half? I don't know if he's that. I don't think he's that kind of mid-forward, but is he someone you'd take a look at? Doesn't sound confident.
I can't unsee the Collingwood in him. I can't. I'm just not. I respect Ginnivan and Collingwood and everything they did. I'm just not a massive, obsessive person for him. I was today when I saw the official request for Xavier Dersma. That was a player that before the period I thought, oh, is there a little bit of the Port Adelaide connection? Come home with Daddy Voss and he'll look after you and come to Carlton. I rate Xavier Dersma really highly, but I don't think the position suits. I was thinking maybe he could replace a Dow type, but I mean, I would love to swoop in on Collingwood and get a bit of Lachie Schultz at Carlton. That would be,
Well, there's a chance, to be honest. Like, the Freo are going to play hardball there, and they're going to say he wants to go to Victoria. He can go to any of the teams. There's plenty there. Have fun. So I don't know. Maybe I doubt it. Normally when a player nominates, that's where they go, but who knows? But yeah, I mean, I don't think Ginny is the kind of player we're after, and knowing there's a bit of the attitude thing that always gets thrown up and the maturity around him. And I think it's also just that he's not like your tackle pressure player. He isn't that. He's just, I'm going to go for the goals. And yep. To an extent, I think we need that. But the way we've probably functioned best this season has been as a unit. I think that's kind of the player I think we need to bring in. So I don't know if he's the right one, but I wanted to have a bit of a discussion because I know a lot have been talking about.
Hey, mate, it's all on the table at this time of year. Every conversation is on the table at this time of year. I'd like to think between Dirds, Owies, Motlop, we'll see. I mean, all three, I think in particular, all three of them showed improvement in their own way. Dirds got injured towards the end and it just didn't work for his body. But I'd like to think that he's going to be able to be a factor in the team next year. Motlop, he just keeps impressing. And I think he's just going to continue to take strides. And Owies is the one who I think the fans, for the most part, are quick to put him out of the 22 at the start of the year. And, you know, we love the young boys and, you know, what they bring. But Owies, he's not going anywhere. He's only going to keep working at it. He's only going to keep getting better. He was, we had a great year. I thought it was a great year from his perspective. 27 goals, 18 games. So I'd like to think that he can get a little bit better. And yeah, we'll see.
No, 100%. And it's interesting. Durden is someone that I didn't think maybe a lot about this year, but the more I'm trying to preview next season and think about who could potentially take a bit more of a step, like it didn't play that many games this year, still kicked 11 goals. And I just feel as if there's a position for him in that forward line. And Carlton have spoken about it multiple times that Motlop has the engine to potentially eventually start to go into the midfield. I don't want to go too early on him, but he was someone that we all had high hopes for this year, taking a big step. It was probably a little bit too soon, still had some really big moments for us, but is he someone that could take that mid-half forward kind of role that we're after and then sort of Durden takes his more forward pocket closer to goal role? I wonder if these are the little things that internally take those steps.
You just reminded me. I found our midfielder that'll pinch hit and be across the half forward line.
Zach Williams.
Charlie Curno.
Oh, Charlie Curno. Why not, mate? Why not Charlie in the middle?
No, because if I think of all the stories and the narratives of some of these players, like Doc was always going to go into the midfield after he won his All-Australian in 2017, got injured, it never happened. But now the prophecy's been fulfilled and he's the kind of there. It's Charlie, we always said from the beginning, one day he'll like be able to play spurts in the midfield. So when he does go a little quiet, get his hands on the ball a little bit, he's dynamic. Makes other players better, draws attention. If we can start getting Charlie Curno to play the Jeremy Cameron role a little bit more, maybe. I'm just a sucker for the story of that.
Oh, no, I'm a big fan. I think there's still an element with our two talls, him and Harry. They haven't played a lot of football together, which is what we always forget. And there's still dynamics of how they best play together that we also need to work out, which is insane to think. Both Coleman medalists, both kick so many goals every single season, even playing together. And there's still an element of how do they best function in a forward line? And I don't know, why not? Like even, Zach is someone that's been thrown up as, can he be a bit more front of center? If a Boyd and Chincotta have seemingly playing really well in the defense and got that covered, is there room to kind of mess around with Zach Williams and see if we can just, I don't know, split his time defender mid forward? I don't know. Who knows? There's so many opportunities and possibilities. It's that kind of time of year, but it's exciting. Why not?
This is where we get creative. So anyway, that'll do us for tonight. The Almost Blues Brothers are going to go live after this. Just got a feeling they're going to have a nice Collingwood contingency in the live chat tonight. I have been mistaken for Joe. I've counted it now 13 times, 13 separate DMs. People thinking that I'm Joe. I'll cop it. I'll just wear it. Fuck it. Like, yeah. But I think the Collingwood supporters are ready for Joe. But I think more than anything, Joe's ready for them.
Oh, so 100%.
He's bitten his lip. He was away last week. he got some fresh air. He went away, and so we're going to get out of here and let Joe do his thing. Oh, no, mate. Not poor Joe. Joe knows exactly what Joe's doing. So stick around, those of you in the chat. The Almost Blues Brothers are going to go live as soon as we finish this stream.
Beautiful.
And yeah, Ian, mate, thanks for joining. Really, always, mate, you just bring good energy. It just feels good when you're around.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that a lot. And it's great to come on. Great to chat to everyone in the comments as well. Big upwards and onwards for 2024. Let's go and get it.
Indeed. One more thing for those watching. The trivia. I've set up a trivia, and it's taken me a while to figure it out, but we figured it out. It's not going to happen tomorrow. I think at this stage it's a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, but just keep an eye out on Instagram and everywhere else. We're going to have a trivia night this week. It's going to be so much fun, and I can't wait. So we'll do that. All right, everybody, good night. It's time for the Almost Blues Brothers. Go Blues.
Up the Baggers.